Without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and invite our guest speaker for tonight, the esteemed Sayyid Ridha Mehdi from the Islamic Republic of Pakistan, who is going to be speaking to us about Imam Ridha alayhi salam and Jihad al-Tab'een. Let's welcome him with a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الصلاة والسلام على نبينا وشفيعنا وطبيب قلوبنا أبي القاسم مصطفى محمد صلوات صلى على محمد محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم رب اشرح لي صدري ويسر لي أمري واحلل عقدة من لساني يفقهوا قولي لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين قال إمام رضا عليه السلام رحم الله عبدا أحيا أمرنا قال الرابي فقلت له فكيف يحيي أمركم قال يتعلم علومنا ويعلمها الناس فإن الناس لو علموا محاسن كلامنا لاتبعونا صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد صلى الله عليه permission and ijaza of all the buzurgan, I would like to start my speech with this caveat that, you know, speaking in front of scholars like those sitting in front of me, khususan Mehdi Abbas, brother Mehdi Abbas, and Dada Mulana Fazli Abbas. It's not an easy task for me, and the thing which compounds the difficulty is that I have to speak in the language, which is not my first language. But as I've been commanded, inshallah, I will try to fulfill the duty given to me, inshallah, in the best possible way for me. As you all know, that the topic of my speech is the Jihad al-Tab'een and Imam Ridha alayhi salam. I have divided my speech into three sections. And before I go into these sections, I would like to give you a brief, though it is not required for the scholars over there, but I can also see some kids sitting in front of me. I would like to give a general, not exactly general meaning of the riwayat which I recited here. Allah, Imam Ridha alayhi salam said, Rahim Allahu Imran, may Allah have mercy on the servant who revives our amr. Ahya amrana, who revives our matter, our amr. And then the Ravi, the narrator, asked Imam Ridha that how it could be done, how your amr can be revived. Imam Ridha replied, يَتَعَلَّمُ عُلُومَنَا, he learns our sciences, our ulum, وَيُعَلِّمُهُ النَّاسِ, and then again teaches them to the public. And that the most important part is the follow-up of the tradition in which Imam Ridha alayhi salam said that what is the outcome of this teaching to the people. Imam said, لَوْ عَلِمَ النَّاسُ مَحَاسِنَ كَلَامِنَا, if people know the beauty of our words, the subtle points of our words, the supremacy of our words, لَتَّبَعُونَ, definitely they are going to follow us. So it's not a simple matter that we learn the sciences of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, ulume Ali Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. It does not end over here. If we learn and then we preach and then the people come to realize what beautiful points it has, what solution these words contain, definitely, its Imam has guaranteed it, لَتَّبَعُونَ, definitely they will follow us, and follow Ahl Bayt alayhi wasalam. First of all, as I told you before, I would like to give you a brief introduction of my presentation. I will divide my speech into three parts. First, I will give a brief definition of this jihad and the jihad at Tabin, and then I will discuss some points from the seed of Imam Raza alayhi salam, that how he did this jihad at Tabin in his life. And then again at the end I will come again to the same tradition which I just recited in front of you. The first thing is that, what is jihad and what is jihad at Tabin? Before we go, what is jihad at Tabin? We need to understand what is jihad. You all know that jihad is striving in the path of Allah. But Reverend Muazzam has pointed out in several of his speeches that every good effort is not jihad. And we all know that the jihad, it can assume different forms. One form of jihad, which is a very obvious form of jihad, which comes to mind whenever we hear this word, is the jihad with the sword. When we fight in the battle, we fight the enemies of Islam. Definitely, it's one of the most prominent form of jihad. But jihad is not restricted only to this physical jihad in the battlefield. We all know that it can assume different forms. Sometimes it is with your writing. Sometimes it is in the arena of defense technology. Sometimes it is in the arena of iqtisad, as Reverend has been pointing out recently in at least, I think from last 4 to 5 years, he is continuously referring to it, that this is the arena where we need to do jihad. So then again, he himself pointed out that every good activity, every good effort in the path of Allah is a good effort. It is worthy in the eyes of Allah, but it's not jihad. When one thing becomes jihad, for example, learning the sciences of Ahlul Bayt, teaching, it's a good thing. For example, creating jobs for jobless people, creating economic opportunities, trying to establish economic justice in a society, it's a worthy thing. It's something which is valuable and definitely yield results in the life hereafter. But it cannot be, from the upper, it cannot be said jihad, unless it has this specific quality in it. And what is this specific quality? Rehber has pointed out, when something is against the enemy of Islam, then it can be called jihad. So we need to identify that what is the most important jihad of our times. Definitely we see in the lives of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam that they identified that what is the fundamental requirement of that time, and they acted accordingly. So helping out Imam in that particular field is the jihad. Because nowadays, once after the victory of Islamic Revolution, the jihad was safeguarding the physical boundaries of this country, Iran. That was the form of jihad that was required at that time. After that, there were advancements that were required and needed in the field of technology, in the field of defense. But now, as the enemies are focusing on the economic weaknesses of the society, Reber has pointed out that doing something in this field is now a jihad. And then again, it comes to jihad-e-tabin, the jihad of explanation. When it becomes jihad, when we see that the enemy is focusing, it's giving its best to hide the reality. Actually, it's projecting the reality completely upside down. When they have created this, the hegemony of, the empire of the media empire, where you cannot get anything other than what they want you to see and what they want you to hear. At this point of time, explaining what is right, what is truth, what is actually happening, it's jihad. In Pakistan, we can clearly see the examples. For example, in the Syria, we have won the battle on the ground, but when it comes to explaining to the people of Pakistan that who was the oppressor and who was the oppressed, is still in the majority of the people of the Pakistan, even including the Shias, it is completely opposite. They believe that the Assad was the oppressors, and the other groups who were actually oppressors, they were the oppressed. So it means that the reality is not projected to them. They are, the barriers have been created for them to see what is actually happening, what is the reality. And this is jihad. We need to explain it to the people. When the people, they realize that what is happening, then they can be able to pick the sides. They can decide what is right and what is wrong. Recently, and that was very interesting for me, when the rabbi compared this Islamic revolution with the two most awe-inspiring revolution of the time, the French Revolution and the Russian Revolution. They are not small things. You might not have heard a lot about them, but in the in the academia, when you talk about the Russian Revolution or before that the French Revolution and these three, you know, the fundamental values of the French Revolution, this is something to be, you know, to be looked as something which is very powerful, which is very mighty. And then the river, when he knows that the dignitaries from the different countries, they were sitting in front of them, and he knew that his speech was broadcasted and it was translated at the same time, very confidently he came and he says that our Islamic revolution is far much superior than these two revolutions, the Russian Revolution and before that the French Revolution. And the evidence, the proof which he presented was very simple, and yet it was understandable. He said, what happened in the French Revolution, after very few years, what happened? The Napoleon came and he took over the power, and after the Napoleon, the same family that was, pushed back and that was actually fought against, again, the same family came to rule the France. And same thing happened in the Russian Revolution. The revolutions were brought forward. They came in the name of the public, but very soon after they were victorious, the people, they were, pushed away from the main arena, and they had no part in taking these revolutions forward. But that's not the case with the Islamic Revolution. It was the people's revolution, and then the people's played very significant role in deciding its future. They were the people who were present in this holy defense, and they played this critical role. And again, still, Rabbi Mozam is insisting that if we need to succeed in this jihad, the iqtisad, we need to bring the people into the arena. We need to explain it to them, and we need to unleash their potential, as he himself mentioned, it's not my word, as it was done at the time of this holy defense. So this jihad-e-tabiin, it's one of the fundamental responsibilities of all of us. And definitely our responsibility as a scholar is much more than the ordinary people, but that does not mean that this responsibility is exclusive to ulamas only. We all have to play our part, be an ulama or an ordinary man. How Imam Raza alayhi salam did jihad-e-tabiin with his actions, I would like to present a few points in it very quickly. Unfortunately, for the first 10 years of Imam Raza, we don't have much information about him. And this is a sorry fact that for IMAS, we do not have much information, especially external activity was going on. We have this reported and we have the account of it, but when apparently there was not much going on, we don't have much account of what was happening actually in the lives of the Imam Masumin alayhi salam. So the first 10 years, the first 5 years were the rule of this Harun, and that was the time, and according to one of the companions of Imam Raza, that was the time when Shamshir Harun Khun Michaka, that was the most suffocating times for the Shias. And the next 5 years, when the Mamun, who succeeded Harun, and there was an infighting between Mamun and Amin, that was the brief period of 5 years when Imam Raza had a little respite. What he was doing at that time was also not very much known to us, but what we can conclude from whatever facts we have is that he was busy in carrying forward and taking forward the goals and the missions of Ahle Bayt alayhimus salam. That's for sure we know. But in the next phase of his life, when the Mamun got hold of the power and there was no rivalry, this clear rivalry from any of his brothers or his other rivals, then he turned his attention to Imam Raza alayhi salam. And Mamun knew Imam Raza very well. Harun knew, because the Abbasis, once they were fighting amongst in the ranks of the Ahle Bayt alayhi salam, and even at the time when they became victorious, the people did not realize that what actually happened. They were feeling that they were fighting for the cause of Ahle Bayt alayhi salam. So they knew Ahle Bayt alayhi salam better than the Bani Umayyah, and they know the tactics, they know the companions, their information was much more wider and deeper. So he turned his attention to Imam Raza, and according to Rahbar, he devised a strategy that was very unique and that was very profound, very deep, and it only can be done by Imam Raza to undo that strategy and this whatever plan he made for Imam Raza. And صلوا على محمد وعلى محمد. محمد صلي على محمد. See what he did. He offered this this wali ehd, the successorship to Imam Raza alayhi salam. And why it was such a clever plan, why it was such a clever strategy, there's not much in time to go in details, but a few points I would like to present here. First of all, there were two factors that were very critical when it comes to the penetration of the message of Ahle Bayt alayhimus salam. One of these factors was that they were oppressed. They were fighting. They were being oppressed by the oppressors. So they were mazloom. So this mazloom, yet naturally, whenever we come across any mazloom, our feelings and our emotions are with the mazloom. So Ahle Bayt alayhimus salam was mazloom, and yet they are fighting for the right cause. It's not that they were mazloom only, but they were mazloom, and at the same time, they were moving forward in the right direction. They were fighting this oppression and this tyranny. And the second fact was their sacredness. It was very much known that the Ahle Bayt alayhimus salam, they are the zahid, they have this taqwa, they are not interested in gathering this material benefits and material wealth. Whatever they gather, whatever they have, it's for the benefit of the common people, for the ordinary people. They are not interested in amassing this material wealth in itself. They don't look at this world as an objective or as their goal. So if Imam Raza, had he accepted this thing, he would like to present to the people that they are not Muslim anymore. You know, any community whose head is the second most important person in the government cannot be termed as a Muslim community. And the same person cannot be termed as someone Muslim, because he is the just second in command of the whole this government machinery. Second, he wanted to portray it in this way that, you know, their taqwa and their zuhud is based on the fact that this power corridors are off to them. Because they cannot get there, that's why they pretend that they have this zuhud. When the opportunity came, you know, they just grabbed it the way that any other could have grabbed it. So Imam accepted this position, which is very much an important position, which is accompanied by this material benefits. So he wanted to take these two critical factors that really helped in increasing the penetration of the message of Ahle Bayt alayhimus salam away from Imam Raza. And even he did not disclose his strategy, his plan to closest of his aides. What Imam Raza did in response: first of all, Imam Raza made it very clear when he left Medina that he has been taken against his will. In his farewell to the grave of the Holy Prophet, in his farewell to his family, he made it very clear that the intentions of the Mamun are not sincere, they are not pure. He made it very clear, and the hearts of the people of the Medina were filled with sorrow when they realized that the Mamun is taking away their Imam against his will. And the amazing part is that he ordered his family, he asked them to cry for him while he was leaving. And then when it was said to him that it's not a good sign to cry after somebody that who is going on a travel, Imam said, yes, it's true, but it's for the travel where the hope of return is high. So Imam made it clear that he's going on a journey where the hope of him coming back is not very high, it's actually very low. So it's a Mamun that who is actually taking him to the slaughterhouse. So here he countered that strategy of this Mamun. And again, when it came to the court, when it was actually presented to Imam Raza, he refused this wali ahd, he refused, and he did not accept it unless he was threatened with the persecution. And again, one of the people who were present over there said, فَمَا رَأَيْتُ خَلَافَةً قَتُّ كَانَتْ أَزْيَعَ مِنْهَا إِنَّ عَمِيرَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ يَتَفَصَّ مِنْهَا وَيُعْرِضُهَا عَلَىٰ عَلِي إِبْنِ مُوسَى وَيَرْفُضُهَا وَيَعْبَىٰ. I have never seen this Khilafat humiliated in such a way that it was given to Imam Raza, and Imam Raza was Ya'ba, he was refusing it, he was not accepted. I have never seen in my life the Khilafat being humiliated in this way. So again, he made it very clear that he's not interested and he has accepted it against his will. Then again, he wanted to show that Imam is the part of the government, so whatever grievances are there is not only limited to Mamun as well, it's also addressed to the Imam Raza as well, because he's also part of the government and he wanted to present him as somebody that who supports the government. Then again, Imam encountered it with, see, this is again a kind of jihadit tabin where he's making it clear that what's actually happening. When he wanted to portray the reality upside down, that Imam is the supporter of the government, Imam is trying to show the reality that that's not the case. Then what Imam did, he accepted it on this condition that he would not interfere in any of the state affairs. And at that time, Mamun accepted this condition, believing probably that later on he would convince Imam Raza to take some little part in any of these activities, and that would be good enough. Taking the fact into account that he had all the pulpits and all the sources to propagate that Imam Raza is taking a part in the running the affairs of the country. But after that, Imam Raza is stuck to that condition. He never accepted, only in one case, and that is again very amazing. And I will finish this part on this case. It was presented to Imam Raza, was requested to offer the Namaz-e-Eid. First of all, he refused. Again, referring to the condition that was accepted by the Mamun, but upon his insistence, he accepted then, but he put another condition that I would offer it the way it was offered by the Prophet and the Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam. So it was announced, all the courtiers, all the people, the signatories, the dignitaries of the state, they were waiting for the Imam Raza, that how he would come out. The people were outside his house, and they were, the important officials. And according to the custom of that time, that was the practice, they were in their best of clothes, they were in their best of rights, they wanted to show their material wealth, whatever they had, they wanted to put it on show, because they believed that, like this, their successors, like this Khulafa, when Imam Raza will come out, he will be in best of his clothes and definitely write the best of his rights. But when Imam Raza came out, he wasn't simply clothed, he was barefooted, and he was in a spiritual state, and he started chanting Labbaik Allahumma Labbaik and Alhamdulillah Allazi Hadana Lihaza, and he turned the whole thing into something that was not intended. And it is reported that the people, they jumped from their horses, and they took off their shoes that were called chakmas, and when it was taking time, it is reported in the history, some of them even they cut their chakmas with their knives to throw it off, and they started following Imam Raza, and the whole party turned into a very spiritual party. And then it was reported to the Mamun that if Imam Raza in such a state would offer the prayers, you can count the number of your days on this throne. Then again, he sent a messenger to Imam Raza to ask him that you should not worry yourself with this thing, you go back and someone else would offer the prayers. So again, here Imam Raza, he did the jihadi tabin, he presented the reality to the people. The last thing is, leaving, if you want to follow this discussion, you can definitely refer to the Insani Devista Panjasala, Man of 250 Years. In this, Rebbe Imam pointed out to these strategies and one by one, and how Imam Raza countered all these strategies one by one. Now coming back to the last part, coming back to the tradition which I cited in front of you, that law alimanna. So fa'inna nasa law alimu mahasina kalaminna. Had people known about the beauty of our word, they would definitely follow us. How we can, again, it's a jihad tabin to make people realize the subtle points of the kalami ahl bayt alayhim assalam. But how it could be done? It could be done at several levels. One level is definitely at the level of speech and dialogue, where we come and we establish the supremacy of Islam at this ideological front, that how Islamic ideology is far superior, how this ideology is based in reality. and again, the different aspects of this ideology. For example, its philosophy of ethics, its philosophy of government, its philosophy of rights and laws, its philosophy of charity. The concept of charity in Islam is fundamentally different from the concept of charity and philanthropy that has developed in the West. It's completely different. There's no time to go into it, but the philosophy of philanthropy is very different here. Islam says about the right of the people who are not in a position, for example, to work for themselves. It's not that you are giving something that does not belong to these people. They have the right to certain things. Then again, there's an explanation for that. In this Tarhe Vilayat, we have this philosophy of ethics and philosophy of law where it has been explained that why it is fundamentally different from the concepts developed in the modernity or developed in the Western civilization. But the higher level of it is that we design and implement systems based on the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And when we implement these systems, then the people come to realize that these social systems, and they only can answer the problems of the modern world. Only they are capable of solving the issues and the miseries faced by the humankind at this time. Then the people realize that definitely would follow it. So I think being a scholar, that's the highest level of this presenting the Kalam Ahl Bayt alayhim salam. And definitely I can see scholars in front of me, those who are working in this arena, be it the area of education, trying to devise systems, educational systems based on the teachings of Islam and the economics. So this is where we need to show the world practically that why Islam is superior. Let me quote Imam Musa Sadr, and that's my last point. He says that if the Muslims, who themselves are in such a state in which we are right now, there is no need to elaborate. Most of the Muslim societies, not all of them, definitely there are exceptions. Iran and, for example, what is happening in Libya, in Lebanon, it's an exception. But most of the Muslims, when it comes to the system, don't expect people to accept the claim that Islam holds answer to all the problems when the condition of the Muslims is in such a state. So if we really want to make the whole world realize the supremacy of Islam, the supremacy of the teachings of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, it cannot only be done through dialogues and through debates. We need to come to this, it could be given multiple names. One of the names is fiqh and nizam, where we need to design systems, nizamat-e-ijtimai, the social system based on the Islamic teachings, and in the practical realm, in this practical world, we need to show the advantages that these such systems hold. And thank you for bearing up with my improper words and bearing up with my English. This is not my preferred language, preferred mode of speaking. And may Allah increase all tawfiqat. And let's pray at the end that Bihaqi Muhammad, I will do it in Urdu, if you don't mind, that we pray to God, Parvardigar, Bihaqi Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad alayhi salam. Tamam mu'minin wa mu'minat wa muslimin wa muslimat ki dili hajat ko pura farma, Parvardigar, tamam mu'minin wa mu'minat wa muslimin wa muslimat ki mushkilat ko bartaraf farma. Bar Allah, dunya mein jahan kahin bhi mu'minin bas rahe, inki izzat, jaan, maal aur aabru ki hifazat farma. Parvardigar, jitne hamare sheikh, khususan hamare do bhaiyon jinke naam yahan liye gaye, brother Muzammil aur Asim, jo aur jitne bhi hamare aseen hai Parvardigar, jo begunah aseen hai Parvardigar, jald az jald unki rihai ke asbab faraham farma. Bar Allah, dunya mein jahan kahin bhi zulm hai, us zalim ke shar ko khud unki taraf palta de. Parvardigar, jitne bhi log zulm ke khilaf awaz utha rahe hain, jis tareeqe se bhi, apni khaas rehmat nusrat inke shamil hal farma. بارے اللہ علماء اکرام راجہ عظام آیت اللہ سستانی رہبر معظم ان کے سائے کو مدام ہمارے سروں پر برقرار رکھ. بارے اللہ تجھے واسطہ آج کی شب کا امام رضا علیہ السلام کا واسطہ ان برکت راتوں کا واسطہ اس شب جمعہ کا واسطہ امام حسین کا واسطہ. پروردگار اپنی آخری حجت ہمارے امام ہمارے زمانے کے امام کے ظہور میں تعجیل فرما. ہمیں ان کے عوان و انصار اور ان کی رکاب میں شہادت پانے والوں میں شامل فرما. صلوا علی محمد و آل محمد.